is the Daily Signal podcast for Tuesday, November 12th, and I'm Kate Trinko. Today, we'll first feature an interview I did with abortion survivor Claire Colwell at the Values Voters Summit, discussing how she felt when she found out she was supposed to have been aborted and lost her twin during the abortion. We'll also play Daniel Davis's interview with a Pennsylvania social conservative activist, talking about what's happening in that purple state. Since the Daily Signal is off for Veterans Day, we won't have our usual headlines today. Now, here's my interview with Claire Colwell.
Tired of high taxes, fewer healthcare choices, and bigger government? Become a part of the Heritage Foundation. We're fighting the rising tide of homegrown socialism while developing conservative solutions that make families more free and more prosperous. Find out more at heritage.org.
So we're at Values Voters Summit with Claire Colwell. Claire, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so first off, you are an abortion survivor.
I am.
Tell me about that.
I met my birth mother in 2009, so 10 years ago, and I had a gift for her, and I ended up thanking her for choosing life for me and giving me my family. And that was the moment she broke down into tears and shared with me about being pregnant at 13 years old. She was in the eighth grade, and she said she found herself pregnant, approached her mother. Her mother took her to an abortion clinic, and she had a dismemberment, a D&E abortion, around 20 weeks. And they told her that her life would go back to normal, all the similar things that they tell women that have abortions today. But she said that her life never went back to normal. In fact, a few weeks later, she went back because she said things didn't seem right. And that's when they told her that she had actually been pregnant with twins and that they had successfully aborted one baby, but that I had survived. And so I was born at 30 weeks. I had a dislocated hip and club feet from being a twin. I was in body casts for a little while to correct those things. But when she shared this with me, obviously I never imagined I would find something like that out. I thought the worst thing that will happen will be she won't want to meet me. Mm-hmm. But instead I found out that I had survived something that was meant to take my life. And so I knew that my life was a miracle. There was a reason that I was here. And I could either forgive my birth mother and share this story to show the humanity of the baby and offer hope and a message of forgiveness to women that have had abortions, or I could be angry and upset. And so I chose to forgive my birth mother and share my story.
So you had no idea before you met her that you had survived an abortion?
No, I was 21 when I found out.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was adopted.
Okay.
So I was placed for adoption, and since my birth mother was 13, and because they were closed adoptions back then, the majority of adoptions were, we didn't know anything about my birth mother until we met her.
How did you feel when you first found that out?
When I first learned that I had survived my birth mother's abortion, I remember not feeling sadness for myself, but looking into my birth mother's eyes and seeing this deep pain that I somewhat identified with. I mean, I had had hard things happen in my life, but I knew just from looking into her eyes that I had never experienced that level of pain, that deep pain that she had experienced. And so I knew that I couldn't keep it to myself.
And was it strange to realize that you had originally had a twin?
I think that it kind of fit some of the pieces of the puzzle together for my life, for me. I remember growing up and wanting a brother, specifically a brother. I had a sister through adoption, but I felt like something was missing. And so, I do think that that was my natural instinct because I lived 5 months in the womb with my twin. And so I knew him or her. And so, yeah, it is crazy. It's surreal to think that I am literally missing probably my other half. You know, but it gives me reason to fight and to speak out in truth because I imagine what our lives would have been like if my twin had been here, and it would have been very different for us.
So before you found this out, and you mentioned you were just 21, did you consider yourself pro-life? Did you have a view on abortion before this?
I am adopted, and so I think I would have told you back then that adoption was always a better option than abortion. But did I ever use that terminology, like I'm pro-life? No. It wasn't something that I ever thought about. I wasn't aware of anyone that had been affected by abortion in my life up until I was 21. And so when I found out that I had been affected by abortion in a very unique way in my mind, that's what I thought back then, it opened up this whole new world for me. Like, okay, how do I feel about this? What does this mean? What does abortion do to a child or to a little girl like my birth mother or to a woman? And I knew that I couldn't stand for what abortion does. And so I chose to take a stance and to speak out.
Now, you've been speaking out for several years now. Has anyone from who identifies as pro-choice, have they approached you? What has the response been from people who aren't pro-life?
It comes up in conversation on the daily for me. All I have to do is sit down on an airplane, and it's small talk. What do you do? What do you do? And it comes up. And so I've had a lot of different responses. A lot of people don't want to hear it, and they will say, well, that's interesting, but I don't believe that happens. And, that's imaginary. You must have made that up. And it is...
Wow, that's so insulting to be like, you must be crazy.
It can be hard to hear, but, I look at those instances as an opportunity to plant a seed. I got them to hear my story, and they're going to go home and think about it. I mean, how could you not go home and think about someone that survived an abortion? Something so eye-opening. Mm-hmm. But I think the majority of people, they hear my story and they see, okay, I can actually see a physical person. I can see your face. I can hear your name. And so this baby that is aborted grows up to be someone just like you. And so they can really grasp onto that and identify with that. And it helps put a face with what the issue of abortion is really dealing with. And I found that a lot of people do change their minds after seeing an abortion survivor.
So what do you think pro-lifers should be doing right now?
I firmly believe that we need to speak love and truth and have our actions speak louder than words. You've heard that before, but I think that there are so many different movements that people can grasp onto and just different ways of approaching the life issue. But if you're in prayer and if you're speaking truth and love and you're reaching out to these women in love and telling them that we can help them, you can't go wrong. I think that every single woman or man or family that is entering into an abortion clinic and considering abortion is looking for a sign and looking for a way out. And if you can imagine somebody holding up graphic signs and yelling, that's not as welcoming, right? It may not be wrong necessarily, but someone that is lovingly saying, I'm here for you, I can help you, that is what women are looking for and what will help them choose life and feel empowered, because that's what women need to feel, and that's what we need to be voicing to them, is that they're strong enough not just to have a career, but to have a family and continue on with their life and continue on with their career, because women are strong enough and capable of doing all those things.
So we've seen a surge in abortion extremism in the past year. Several states either passed or looked at passing laws that would have allowed abortion up to birth. How do you, as an abortion survivor, feel about that? And how do you feel when so many liberal politicians seem willing to say that, yes, anytime up until the very moment of birth, it is okay to end this child's life?
I remember what it felt like when New York lit up the Empire State Building pink in celebration of a woman's right to choose and late-term abortion. To me, you know, all these people were celebrating this, and they thought it was this incredible thing. And then I'm standing there, and there's other women just like me who have survived abortions or who have had abortions themselves, and we're standing there thinking, do they not see me? Do they not hear what I've been through? Do they not feel how abortion has hurt me? And so when politicians and when states are celebrating these late-term abortions rights, it almost takes my breath away, because I think, okay, they're celebrating the right of women, and yet they're not acknowledging mine. They don't care about my right as a woman, as an unborn woman, about my right to choose, because I definitely would not have chosen to be aborted. I definitely would not have chosen for my twin to be aborted, and for my life, my entire life, I will walk this earth as an abortion survivor when I don't have to, when I didn't have to. Because if my rights had been taken into consideration, I would have chosen to live.
And you're a mom yourself, right?
I am.
And what was the experience of pregnancy like for you? I mean, did it feel, I would imagine that, you know, coming as an adopted child, it must have been a very emotional experience.
I had incredible childhood as an adoptee, and so I actually have three children. I have two that I have chosen to be a mother to. I married a single dad, and so I've had the privilege of raising them. And then I have one biological daughter. And so I've only had one pregnancy, and that was extremely eye-opening for me because I realized that if my life had been taken through abortion as it was meant to, as my twins was, that my little girl wouldn't be here. And so I think that was the experience, the really eye-opening experience for me, was being pregnant and realizing the true domino effect that abortion has, because my daughter's life is now a miracle too, because I lived to tell about my birth mother's abortion.
It's beautiful, and I have cousins who are adopted, and we are so grateful to their birth moms that they chose life for them. And yes, I love the way you say it. I chose to have my daughters.
Adoption is such an incredible thing, and people often ask me, Claire, why have you been able to respond in such a positive way? How have you been able to forgive your birth mother? And it truly is because of the family that I was adopted into and the way that I was raised. I knew without a doubt that my birth mother was already forgiven, and so I knew that I should forgive her too.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you for having me.
Do conversations about the Supreme Court leave you scratching your head? If you want to understand what's happening at the court, subscribe to SCOTUS 101, a Heritage Foundation podcast breaking down the cases, personalities, and gossip at the Supreme Court.
Well, I'm joined now by Dan Bartkowiak. He is the Communications Director for the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Dan, thanks for your time today.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
So there's a major push in certain states across the country, including Pennsylvania, where you are, to make sexual orientation and gender identity into a legally protected status. And it's actually a national push, too, right now in Congress with the Equality Act, as Nancy Pelosi has made that one of her top priorities. But in Pennsylvania, I understand there's a bill right now in the legislature that Democrats are pushing and the governor is actually pushing. Can you explain what the bill would do and where this fight stands right now?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Pennsylvania, just recently, there was an activity on the steps of the Pennsylvania Capitol that was run by a commission that our governor enacted, the Commission on LGBT Affairs, something that I don't know if any other state has such a commission, but there's over 40 members, and really their main lobbying effort is to see this SOGI bill enacted. They had a dance party on the steps of our Capitol to really advocate for this. And they often talk about, you know, almost with the dance party mentality of the equality and the tolerance that you can have by passing this. But really, when you look at the actions of this, it's anything but that. And Pennsylvania, I think, is really seeing it, especially with what's going on in Philadelphia. You have an agency I recommend to anyone. USA Today had an article in October, a lady that was through the foster care system, talking about how Catholic Social Services in Philadelphia had helped her. She was placed in a family that really gave her a lot of the needs she needed. And she has since even fostered a few children through them. And so Catholic charities, Catholic Social Services have for years and years been helping so many families and kids. And the city of Philadelphia has rescinded their contract with Catholic Social Services, not because of the effectiveness of their organization, not because of a lack of need. They've actually announced that they need hundreds of more foster families. So there's a huge need in the city. But they took away their contract because of the local ordinance of a SOGI law, so an anti-discrimination law that adds these special statuses of sexual orientation, gender identity. And so what's happened now is because of the Catholic Social Services faith and the Catholic Church believing that marriage is between a husband and wife through their organizations, to have any type of preference to say that we want to try to have a foster child in a family of a mother and a father, to have any type of preference, the city has said we're canceling your contract. And so you talk about tolerance and fairness. You know, here's an agency that's helped hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of families finding, placements for these kids. And the need is great there, yet they're not going to have the fairness tolerance to say we may disagree on this belief of marriage, but the services you're providing are great for these families. They've dug in to say that that's a line that we can't cross, and so they've rescinded it, and it's really impacting these kids that need these foster families. So it's up to the Supreme Court. They've actually been challenging this in court, and it's right now the Supreme Court is going to decide if they're going to take on this case. So
is this the Pennsylvania or the U.S. Supreme Court?
The U.S. Supreme Court. That's a good point. And so it is something that the Beckett Fund is involved. And so they're pursuing. They've lost in some initial court hearings, and so now it's really seeing, are they going to have the high court take on this case?
So the adoption agencies have certainly been on the front end of this kind of sexual orientation, gender identity policy. Who else would it affect if this gets passed, especially at the state level?
Yeah, that's a great question, and there's certainly multiple areas that will be impacted. There was a recent ruling out of Kentucky. Blaine Adamson is a T-shirt designer, and the Lexington, Kentucky ordinance had this SOGI law, and they went after him because he declined to print a message on his T-shirts that was conflicting with his beliefs. So he'll work with anybody, but when you had a message of it was a gay pride festival that he just declined to do, and he's declined churches, he's declined a variety of messages, but he, in this instance, they took him to court, and their state Supreme Court just ruled in favor of Blaine to say, you know what, he's not discriminating unfairly against any person. It's the message that it's adhering. And so that's the concern that we certainly would have in Pennsylvania is, business owners, especially those in the wedding industry that would be impacted by this state ordinance. I think it also, this state law, it would also look at the issue of privacy rights. I often point to the state of Maine. There was a court case, a student that identified as a opposite sex wanted to use the opposite sex restrooms and locker rooms. And the court, the state Supreme Court in Maine, ruled pointing to the anti-discrimination law, so the SOGI law that was passed in Maine, to say that based on this special status of sexual orientation, we have to allow students that identify with the opposite sex, the opposite biological sex, to use those facilities. And so it infringes upon the privacy rights of all the students in these schools. And so, again, that's what would happen with these SOGI laws. So they talk about fairness and tolerance, but really in action, it's really going after these people's religious beliefs. It's going after privacy rights throughout the state. So that's the concern.
So in the context of the Pennsylvania legislature, I understand that the House and the Senate are both Republican-controlled with a Democratic governor. How do the political parties kind of shake out on this issue? Is it kind of a party line divided issue, or are some Republicans folding or some Democrats folding? What does that look like?
Well, certainly we would hope that when it comes to privacy rights and the ability to live out your faith, it shouldn't be a party issue. We have seen the pressure that's put on legislators, whether you're Democrat or Republican, to see something like this enacted. And so, again, it's this talk of tolerance and fairness that they put up forward in favor of this bill, and sometimes that gravitates to a lawmaker. So far, we've been able to stop any advancement. It had one vote in a committee in one session. That did pass, and so their members of both parties had voted in favor of it. So there's certainly the concerns there. I think when more and more families are finding out about this bill and what it does, the more pushback that there is. We had one of the largest rallies a couple sessions ago in the rotunda of the Capitol, and it was really highlighting the privacy aspects of this and the grave concerns that many parents have. So the reality is that's what this law does. It has the implications. We're seeing it in other states. So the more that parents and families find out about that and the implications of this type of law, I think that does start to spill over into lawmakers. It's certainly the need to get in touch with these lawmakers and, you know, both on both sides of the aisle to highlight the concerns of this legislation. But so far we've been able to kind of push back, and we will look to continue to do that despite some increased pressures that are certainly happening to try to pass a SOGI law in Pennsylvania.
Well, you mentioned that this kind of policy has already taken effect in Philadelphia and it's pushed out Christian religious adoption providers. Do we know how many kids have missed out on getting a place with a family because of this?
Yeah, it's a great question. I guess, you know, like, again, I pointed this, it was Adrienne Cox wrote this USA Today article. And she was highlighting how Philadelphia last year put out an urgent need of 300 families that were needed for placing kids. So it's 300 kids that they didn't have families for. And so there's certainly this grave need for more foster families. And here you had Catholic Charities, Catholic Social Services doing great work and trying to help these families. And they've been around for years and years. They've been able to build up somewhat a clientele of foster families. And so to just rescind their contract based on this, you know, local ordinance, which is talking about the Equality Act nationally and then the SOGI law statewide, it's a similar idea that says if you have any belief that says marriage between a husband and wife, if there's any preference to give in a foster family, we can't do business with you. And that's not tolerant. That's not fair to these families that are doing great work, these agencies that are doing great work, to just flippantly deny them the ability to do their work that they're doing so well.
Well, I mean, it seems like even in the adoption space, I mean, this is the adoption space is supposed to be about kids, but it seems like this is making it about adults, like as though adults have the right to adopt a child, or, you know, even if that's a right, that somehow supersedes the child's right to a family. I mean, isn't that kind of what it comes down to, is that it's picking adults over kids?
I think you're exactly right. I think when you look at a child's needs and then looking at the adult desires that you're seeing, I think especially, you know, you look at the privacy rights, what we're talking about. I mean, there's some school districts. Well, we're involved in a school district in Lancaster County, a Lanco school district, that's trying to do the right thing. They are looking to make changes to their locker rooms and restrooms to make it multi-user. So to have it a single stall, a single room that someone can go in and change for gym class and not have anyone that's either looking at them or they can feel secure and private. A legislation like the SOGI law could make that illegal for a school to make that decision, to say that we're not going to open up locker rooms to the opposite biological sex, but we'll make these locker rooms where it's just single user, single stall. It's almost that would be illegal because they're showing this discrimination against a girl that wants to use the boys' locker room or vice versa. It's putting these desires that really infringe upon a child's rights, and it's looking at really some of these adult desires that they are trying to inflict upon these kids, and the kids are the ones that, yes, are certainly ultimately hurting. So I think there are many areas, both adults, but especially with kids, that are being impacted, adoption agencies, privacy rights in schools, that are serious issues that we're not sometimes addressing when these SOGI bills are coming up.
Well, I think our listeners will be interested to hear it's not just the social liberals that are pushing bills in Pennsylvania. There is a new pro-life bill being pushed in Pennsylvania, a heartbeat bill, which we've seen in a number of other states pass. This one, like those, would ban abortion after the heartbeat is detected in the child, so like 6 to 8 weeks. Tell me about this bill and, you know, what its prospects are in Pennsylvania.
Well, we certainly advocate for protections for life. You know, right now in Pennsylvania, you can have an abortion up to 6 months in pregnancy, 24 weeks. You know, the majority of babies that are born at 24 weeks prematurely survive and thrive. Yet we have such a late stage in allowing abortions to happen in Pennsylvania. And it's just, it's archaic. You know, it's a law that's been around for decades. And the need to have improvements is certainly there. We've advanced medical science. We know that there is a baby. When you look at that ultrasound, when I hear the heartbeat, my firstborn, I remember vividly at, it was about 7 weeks, hearing his heartbeat, was able to, and it just made it so real for me. And to see the baby on the ultrasound, to know what we're seeing through science, the development of a baby, that we can do better than allowing abortion up to 6 months in pregnancy. And certainly other states that allow it to 9 months. I'm from New York, and New York to praise a law that says you can have an abortion at any time on demand, you know, no questions asked really, it's absurd. And so we as a culture need to come together and say, we're seeing these babies being aborted, and through ultrasound, through technology, through what we know, these are lives, these are babies, and we can do better, and especially here in Pennsylvania. And so we appreciate Representative Borowitz, Senator Mastriano, that are doing tremendous work in leading this effort with the heartbeat bill. And we're certainly advocating for really any protections that we can bring to make Pennsylvania better at saving these kids' lives.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. But Dan Bartkowiak, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much. Thanks for all you're doing at Davidson.
And that'll do it for today's episode. Thanks for listening to the Daily Signal podcast, brought to you from the Robert H. Bruce Radio Studio at the Heritage Foundation. Please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. And please leave us a review or rating in iTunes to give us any feedback. We'll see you again tomorrow.
The Daily Signal podcast is executive produced by Kate Trinko and Daniel Davis. Sound designed by Lauren Evans and Thalia Rampersad. For more information, visit dailysignal.com.